What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Unz. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Christ. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it made some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Oberst, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. How exciting is this? Hello, everybody. I'm David Frangioni, CEO and publisher of Modern Drummer Magazine, and what a webinar we have today. If you're into metal, this is the webinar to be at and to see. So let me introduce what's going on today. Let me share a screen here. Okay, great. All right. So today's All Access Hits. It's featuring Josh Wilbur and Art Cruz, who we'll bring on in a minute, from Lamb of God. These guys are absolutely amazing. Josh Wilbur is a world-class producer, especially in the metal world. Just an incredible resume of producing and mixing. So, you know, get your questions ready, because it's very rare to have access to a producer at this level. And he's got so much great insight. And of course, Art Cruz, drummer for Lamb of God, amazing drummer, has so much metal sharing he's going to do with us on drumming. So I'm David Frangioni. As I said, Metal Mania Part 1 is going to cover drum setup and recording, exercises that Art uses to warm up, practice, and prep to play, course double bass drumming, how to get a metal gig, and all the things that happen once you get the gig. And then we're going to talk about our hosts and sponsors today, Meinl, Drum Channel, and of course, Modern Drum, and Q&A. So at the end, we're going to have questions and answers. It's the most popular part of our webinars, as you would imagine, because they're your questions that we're going to answer. There's a button at the bottom of the Zoom app, and we'll also, of course, be looking at Facebook for our comments. These are produced, these webinars, by Taylor Whipple and One Firefly and Modern Drummer. So Taylor will be joining us for the Q&A at the end as well. And as you all know, because that's why you're here, Lamb of God, the producer, the mixer, and the drummer are with us today. They have a new album coming out June 19th. They've already been releasing singles, so we'll talk about those as well. And now, without any further delay, let me bring on Art Cruz and Josh Wilbur.
Woo! How are we doing?
All right. So welcome. So great to have you guys here.
Very fun. Very happy.
It's exciting. We got literally thousands and thousands and thousands of people all over the world that are looking forward to this. We've been deluged with emails, people asking us, that want to ask questions to the both of you. So we'll get to those. And of course, some of the live questions. So let's jump into it. So, new Lamb of God record. Josh produced it. Josh mixed it. Art drummed on it. Let's talk about making the record. Let's talk about the record, and basically, let's start with you, Josh. You know, you get the call. new Lamb of God record. Where, what happens? What's the process of making the record? And let's focus it more on the drum side of it. What happens between you and Art making this record?
A lot of one-on-one basketball. that's what a lot of happens.
Josh, but I don't know about, you know, that's the drumming side. We bounce sticks, not basketball.
Honestly, like, you know, at this point, it wasn't a super surprise to get a call to be doing the record. I think I'm like six in deep with these guys now. So the first one I remember, though, I like jumped up and down on my bed and screamed. I was so stoked.
Once you got the call, though, and you're in the studio and you're listening to the songs, how do the drum parts develop? And what's in the studio with Art look like from the producer side of it?
Well, we started out in the, you know, like it starts out with Mark and Willie coming in with riffs. That's the beginning. And then from there, and they tend to, you know, write the song with a super rough basic idea of what, you know, like the song's going to feel like. And then once we got the riffs all kind of put together, we went into a rehearsal studio, went into Mark's house in the garage and put them up and just started jamming them and, you know, let Art kind of do his thing on it. In fact, I think Art can correct me, but I think Checkmate was the first one that we actually jammed out as a band, right?
Yeah, that was the first. That was the first one as a band, and the first one that ended up being released, surprisingly.
Yeah,
shocker.
So, Art, so on Checkmate, you have a reference from the demo, and then from there, what's your approach to kind of figuring out? Okay, this is what the song drumming structure is going to go like.
I think the beautiful part about Checkmate and why Checkmate was the first song, we kind of just dove straight into that one, right, Josh? It was kind of like that one changed so much from start to finish. So it was one of those things where it already had its thing, but we all realized, man, the way our workload was and knowing what was in front of us, we had to kind of dig into the ones that we felt needed the most work. Checkmate was one of those songs. It was a riff frenzy. And I'm not even talking like, it's just constant riffage of amazing riffs, but it was a little bit too much for a song.
It was like 6 minutes long.
Yeah.
Write that down.
It was a lot. It was a lot of riffs. So, I mean, it started from that. And this is where somebody like Josh is so, he's the unofficial, official band, sick band member in Lamb of God, because you don't realize how important he is until you're really actually digging in with him and having to break something like this down and a song like this apart. And it ended up being a song that was very Lamb of God. And I would consider it a very secure starting point for us to get our heads in the right position, right? I would say to get going and give us some excitement. It that's kind of how that song came about.
Yeah.
And then drum part wise, Josh is editing the song to kind of get the structure down, maybe shorten the song and just kind of, you know, give it a little more definition, you know, from an arena.
Well, like, they kind of did that live on the floor, you know, like the Lamb of God in particular, like it doesn't matter what they do in the computer to write the songs, because that's really gets thrown out as soon as we get together as a band. Like that's been pretty consistent on every record. And, you know, this one was exciting because, you know, Art got a fresh look at it, and it was like fun to see Art's excitement over the whole project. And it actually brought like a lot of excitement to the record, you know, like, you know, Art would like reference, be like, what about like if we did, you know, and like get super stoked on it. Next thing you know, like I'm a very easily excitable guy. So if Art's like, if I just hit the ride, like really fast, like that, like super old school. And I'm like jumping up and down, like, this is the coolest thing ever. So like, we kind of got like a feed off on the energy on each other and the whole, I don't know, the whole process, like, but live, as far as structuring the parts, they definitely, it's a jam. It becomes a jam, you know, like, they kind of know the parts, but like, you know, they'll play through like four, eight bars of a part and be like, hey, stop, everybody stop. Can we just right here do the change to the next part? And then, yeah. Okay. Pick it back up. Two, then, three, four, and they're in.
And when you guys are making the record and you're going through these songs, Do you wait until all the songs are ready? Or because, Josh, you have your own studio and you could do this in your sleep, are you cutting a song as soon as it's like everybody kind of has it together? Or are you waiting until the end to actually track it for real?
No, we did this in the, we were like just jamming in Mark's garage, like a garage band for the beginning, like, you know, like a real band.
Yeah. But you actually cut it though.
We cut actually drums last.
You cut drums last.
Yeah.
All at one shot, like all the songs are ready, and then Art plays all the songs down.
Yep.
At the point that I was ready to finally record, it came to that, and that was. It's not the first time I've done it, but this was the most extensive first time of doing it last and realizing how beneficial. And this is something that's cool. I think, Josh, have you been doing this lately? Like, have you been continuing
doing the drums last?
Like, drums last?
Yeah, a lot, a lot.
I mean, I just find that the way that the song changes so much from start to finish that even like there's already like these rough vocal stems that are, man, this is a great vocal line. We're keeping this vocal line. We're solid on this. So it's almost easier for me to come back and realize, wow, I can hit some jabs and stabs on those vocal lines that are not moving. And I'm the last resort. So it's kind of like, I think we're safe at this point. we've come through all of the changes from changing things in guitar world while they're recording guitars, changing things when the bass is getting laid out and so on and so forth. So I think being last is fun.
In particular, in Memento Mori, there's a great example of what he's talking about, that being like the second single they've released. There's the last chorus does like an extra vamp, and Randy screaming, wake up, wake up, wake up. And like, you know, we didn't know that Art was going to end up like stacking like snare and chinas like right on top of Randy to like emphasize it. That was like a last minute, the day of recording type of thing. You know, because we knew the vocals and Art's playing to the record. So he just naturally starts like adding accents around the vocals. It was great. That's a big moment in the song too.
That's amazing.
I love it.
That really makes a huge difference in all of the nuances that come out on the track for Art to be able to really play to those. Like you would live, if somebody starts vamping, you hear it and you immediately
boom.
Jump
You're
on
jamming.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
That energy really, and it comes through, you know, it's come on the songs I've heard, it comes through. So
I mean, especially Josh, when you're recording last, drums last, it's like one of those things where it's when we're recording real drums at this point, you're like, it's there now. It's like it's easier for us to move it around once you're there, right? I mean, kind of like if you're programming drums and stuff like that, it's one of those things that's easy. But I mean, real drums, you have to do it the right way.
Yep. And what that actual Memento Mori part is one of my favorite parts on the record, because right after that China thing, he does the sickest fill ever, and Art promised me if they play live, if we ever get out of this quarantine, then and we get concerts again, Art's gonna play that fill with one hand in the air.
Yeah,
just pulling out to the top balcony where I am.
That's the goal.
I love it. That's cool as hell. Let's jump into. I'm gonna share my screen again. And let's jump into drumistic things for a second. Mm-hmm. Shifting gears. So you use Vic Firth 2B?
Yes, sir.
And the gloves. So take us through your setup and you know, why you use the gloves, the sticks, like just the thought process behind what you use, you know, what you're using and why, and how other metal drummers can learn from this.
Absolutely. I think the important part about playing metal is actually hitting with passion, hitting with just with power. You know, I'm a very hard hitting drummer. And the thing that's beautiful about that with something like Vic Firth and Vic gloves, I kind of go approach it as a baseball batter. It's very
he hits
high
like
car.
Baseball batter.
I think I'm
hit
swinging
home
for the fences, man. I'm swinging for the fences constantly. So it's like, my pine tar is my Vic wax, and it's the new Vic wax that they put on to add some extra grip for that. And then the gloves are more not for grip for me, somebody like me, but to protect my hands at the same time, because I'm really hitting really hard. So the gloves are something to protect my hands, all while being able to lay into the kit and have some grip stability. But the Vic wax is one little touch that I add that really helps the grip. And a heavy 2B, I mean, that's a big stick. Even for fast metal drumming, it's a big stick. But like, I've been thankful to have gotten used to that stick over the years, and it has the right weight, the right whip, the right power. It's just fully balanced for me to be able to hit hard and stay consistent, man. So that three part, gloves, sticks, and the stick wax is my go-to for sure. And my drum tech, P King, he likes to hack it a little bit with a razor blade and give some extra rivets in it, to very Vinnie Paul style, for even more grip. So it's very rare that I'm dropping sticks, but I'll be breaking some sticks before dropping them.
And then tell us about your pedals, because I know that's another secret weapon of yours, is your bass drum pedals.
Absolutely. I've been playing the same pedals for 11, almost 12 years now. It's the Trick Dominator pedals. Since I was about 19, 20 years old, I've been using those pedals, and I've never changed them. It's essentially a longboard, but I've been using a heel-toe technique. And I know there's a modern twist on the heel-toe technique, for, I think, a lot of death metal drummers and very speed metal drumming when they're using triggers and kick drum triggers like that. But when you're somebody like me that really wants to lay into the drum and focus on the power that you're getting behind it, the Trick pedal has that power. There's a lot of other pedals and longboards out there, but the Trick pedal allows me to do my heel toe technique without losing that whip and that power. And they also have these dead blow beaters, these new dead blow beaters that are insane. So that's my combination go-to 100%.
Okay, and then Meinl cymbals. Are there specific cymbals with Meinl for metal that you just feel are like a must-have in a metal rig?
Yeah, I think me and Josh can agree on the same type of chinas and the same crash cymbals. We use the Byzance medium thin crashes a lot on our record. As They're well, incredible. he's a big fan of the Byzance, the 18-inch. It's a traditional one that you're running. I like brilliant stuff because they look nice, but there's a little more brightness in those. But this one has a lot more chaw action on it, and the size is perfect. But Meinl cymbals all the way. Been with them for, again, over 10 years. I think it's the I was gonna say Soundcaster. They don't make those anymore, but that's how long I've been with them. They make the new dark crashes and dark chinas that are awesome cymbals. So very versatile cymbals, an option for everything.
Yeah, you got a lot of effect cymbals too.
Yeah, and I'm running a lot of these neat, nice little filter trash crashes on the left hand side as well as on the right, that keep it really thin but kind of cut through the mix. Without overpowering. There's a lot of cymbals in people's setup that are just like, you can't mic them, or they don't need to be mic'd, and they're just very screechy raw. And these ones, I found, like on this record, I had to find a nice balance, and Josh was really helpful with that. We've made a lot of switches in the studio with cymbals, but not a lot. I mean, even from the start,
yeah, not too much.
Right, Josh?
It's pretty much like, your normal setup for the part.
Yeah, thankfully. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a big part of recording a drummer is not having them like change up their routine too much, because, I mean, that's the whole point, right? If I'm just going to make it sound the way that I want it to sound, why would I not just program it at this point in time? Like, if I want to hear Art play, I want to hear his kit. So.
Well, and Josh, aren't you a drummer at least at some point in your career?
Yeah.
Your instrument?
Yeah. Yes, you are. Yeah, you are, Josh. Come on.
I can come up with like good ideas and, you know, convey it, be like, all right, I want you to do something like this, but can you execute it? Cause I can't, you know, like, you know, I mean, it's been on decades since I've sat behind a kit to actually like play, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, I mean, I program stuff here real quick in my studio with the V drums, and it's like a definite case of close enough, and I'll figure it out in the computer later, you know,
but it helps in producing.
It does. I certainly have a good understanding of what can be pulled off, and you know, like what, I think I'm good at like pushing a guy like Art to the top of his ability and being like, hey, try it. I know this is a little out of your comfort zone, but I'm pretty sure, because my general rule is like, I'm a hack of a drummer, and if I think I can almost do it, then a guy like Art can definitely do it. How many times did I say that? I'm like, no, you can do it, because I can almost do it.
Yeah.
your ideas are not going to, you know, you don't have any limitation to what you can really come up with for drum parts because you got a guy like Art who can play them.
Yes, for the most, yeah.
Which is really cool. I
mean, especially feet, man. Art's feet are unreal, dude. Art's got like Art's the real deal in the metal drummer feet department. Like, actually in the all drummer department, but like, but you know what? Thank what you don't know about Art is he can play some mean tower power licks too.
Oh, you better believe it. Oh man, I've never been able. That's the thing, David. It's like there's come a time now where I'm realizing, man, like, I've been so busy from the start of my career till up until now that I've never had a chance to really like be able to like just play drums to have fun. Not that I'm not having fun, but you know what I'm talking about. Just jam and not have to be learning a song or writing a song and this and this and that. But Tower of Power, David Garibaldi licks are like one of my favorite.
Did you ever study with David or anybody like him?
Never. I don't study enough. And this quarantine has woken me up to do that. So trust me, that's something I've been like, okay, now's the time. I have no excuses. I have nothing but time. Let's figure it out.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And that extra vocabulary. So let's finish the kit out, and then I want to get to some drum technique stuff for exercise and, of course, double bass, as Josh said. So toms, kick drums, just run a kit real quick in terms of sizes, drum heads. What's the rest of the rig look like?
Definitely. So I'm running the whole ship is ran by Gibraltar Hardware, thankfully, because I use a lot of stuff. But all of which that I use, thankfully. I see a lot of big drummers out there don't use everything. I love using everything. So Gibraltar Hardware, I'm running with the Evans EC2 clear heads on all my toms. And surprisingly, getting into heads with this recording, we were trying so many different heads. I mean, I was trying all kinds of different heads. And they would work for what we needed them for. Unfortunately, I hit really hard and we just could not. I think it was like, Josh, every verse, we were just.
Yeah, it was honestly very frustrating. Like Art is, Art definitely swings on the snare like a baseball bat. And we ended up using a head that, just being totally honest, is not like my favorite sounding head, but it survived the beating that Art was putting on it. Because at one point I was like, Art can't get in a flow. Like, I wanted him to use like a thinner head. I don't remember what it was, but I wanted him to use like a thinner version, like an Evans head. And he, like, I couldn't even get through a verse without it just being toast. Like, the pitch was like, doo, 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 doo. Like, you just hear it stink. It would almost be like one hit in the middle. And it's weird. Like, it's, Art has great technique. It's just a very strong technique. And it's not like he's not rebounding or anything like that. It's just super hard, solid hitting. I was like, all right, I have to accept that I'm going to lose this battle. Art needs to be able to get in a groove. I can't be stopping him every verse and let the guy not play his drums. So I just had to go to a head that was a little thicker than I would have chose tone-wise. But I'd give up that for the ability to let the man play his instrument, you know?
Change the sound, Josh, at that point? Like, how do you ultimately get the sound you want?
It all came out great. I mean, it's all, you know, everybody.
The room helped.
We were at 606, which is a sick studio. The whole thing was great. It was all fine. But, you know, like, it's part of making records, you know? Like, there's a give and take balance always with every instrument in what works for the player and what works for you. That's just part of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for those watching, that was the Evans hybrid, Kevlar head, the hybrid, marching / drum kit head that they released. And I've been using that for a long time. It's redeveloped itself even more. And that's the head that we ended up going with, thankfully. And it that's the one that lasted.
Yeah. They can stop bullets and they can stop Art swing.
So yeah, good time. What rounds out the rest? What, how many toms do you use? What are the sizes?
10 inch rack tom, 12 inch rack tom, 16 inch floor tom on my right. And Josh was, and this happened, I've never played this before, never did the battle, the war drum floor tom, double floor tom thing. I tried it once and I had them backwards. I had the 16 on my left and an 18 on my right, But Josh has a very, very valid point. And I see drummers that still keep that 16 on the left and go to the right where you have to cross over. But he has a point where it's like you only hit that so often in so many different parts. Like, I think to get the consistent power behind both of them, add the 18 on the left. So we ran with an 18-inch on my left-hand side. So it looks a little funky because I haven't really seen it too often, but it worked for me. So 10, 12, 16 on the right, 18, 22, 18-inch kicks. And the 13, I think the snare we used, snare size was a 13, 5.5 on the recording, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's your snare, whatever. I don't know what the yeah. It's 13, though.
13.7. Yeah. So okay, that's my deep size. I love 13.7, yeah.
It was a deep snare, but it was a 13. So, like, you got depth, and it had a little more crack.
Crack, absolutely. I love the crack, but I love the body of a 7, for sure.
And which snare did you use?
It was a crush snare, and it was a it's considered the high, I think it's the multi-species wood snare. It's a bunch of different woods. Yeah.
Oh. It's actually funny. Yeah. I did Trivium and Lamb of God almost back-to-back. And they were in the same room, and both Art and Alex play white crush kits.
Yeah, that's funny.
Super random, but like.
Yeah. It's not they were working.
Why, it just happened to be.
It just worked out that way.
So with this heavy hitting that you do, what are some exercises for your hands? We'll get to your feet in a second. But for your hands, what are some exercises that you do to warm up, to practice, to build up the stamina, and just the chops, basically, to be able to 100%. Hit like you do?
I would definitely have to listen to some Santana first. That's my ultimate move. And I was talking to Josh about this. I was like, and Josh realized, like, yeah, I think you're right. I don't actually have a warm-up routine with rudiments or sticks. It's a very Gene Hoagland approach in the sense of metal. Gene picks up, he wraps three sticks in each hand, and he literally just sits there and does this for like 10 minutes. I use the exact same technique. But there's different important aspects to my warm-up routine, and it's an hour process, and that's a stretching routine. I really prep my body, and it's almost like a light yoga routine that I do to really get in the zone. And usually it's kind of like a pitcher. I'm a big baseball fan, so I like to prep like pitchers do. Most of them are in their own world. They're not talking to anybody. They're doing their stretches. They're doing their routines. And not to mention, they're not throwing too many bullpen pitches. They're prepping their body though to prepare for the game. I'm the same exact way. So when it comes to prepping, a lot of stretching, finger stretches, forearm stretches, everything from arms, all my limbs have to be fully relaxed and loose. But I don't find myself picking up a pair of sticks until that intro kicks. It might be a mental trick, but I have a routine like we all do. I know most drummers that are in show business have a thing. Some people take showers before they play, or they have to count to 10 and do all these weird things. But for me, I don't pick up a pair of sticks until my drum tech clicks that intro, and then bam. Then I'll pick up the sticks, loosen up a little bit, and that's literally my prep. I don't wish I had a more in-depth routine with warming up, because I don't, but it works.
Hopefully you
me.
Open up with Omerta.
Yeah, as long as I'm opening up with a slow song, I'm just kidding. But I find sometimes for me what it works, and in my opinion, if you're over-analyzing your practicing, but this is for me. I found that for me, when I started to really like focus and try and warm up and do practice rudiments or songs, song parts that have been bugging me, I end up taking that with me onto the stage. So some of us are really good at that. Some of us, unfortunately, can take that negative, oh man, I was messing this up in my warm-up routine. Oh, it's okay, I'll knock it out on the stage. And then you just blow it even harder on stage. So I kind of just go in cold, just cold turkey, bam, let's rock and roll. And I'm a jam drummer. I love late 60s and 70s, and like I said, funk and things, music like that. So it's a very loose approach.
But you do use the 10 minutes of the three sticks in each hand, or is it entirely the yoga?
I don't even touch the sticks. Entirely stretching. I usually pound a Gatorade or any type of electrolytes beforehand. as well as I can't deny Red Bull and a cup of coffee if necessary, but that's literally it. That's literally it.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay.
Well, the short answer is, I don't warm up.
I don't warm up.
Oh no, it's very much a warm up though. In terms of, I mean, he's prepping, as he said, he's prepping to play the show, and in order to play the show and play the music with that level of physicality, you figured out how to get your body to be able to perform at its highest level.
Thankfully, yeah. Because I've tried. I want to. Like, it's one of those weird things. I want to get on a pad and get the dressing room coming in. I'm like, what's going on, brother? Yeah, just prepping. What's up, man? Like, people walking.
Can't talk, guys. Can't talk. Double strokes right now.
All right. Well, that's incredibly insightful. I know a lot of metal drummers look at that and be able to apply it and understand that the psychology of it and the physicality of it are the most crucial things for your routine and an hour of getting in the zone and prepping your body. That's quite a warm-up routine.
It is. I would say I can't compare it to being in the studio. I was freaked out the entire time. So I was kind of just probably sitting in a corner and just, you know, and then finally we ended up coming up with this nice coffee concoction and it kind of, yeah, let's do it. Woo!
A lot of iced coffee.
So let's go to your feet. Josh Wilbur, he says that your feet are absolutely phenomenal. He's heard the fastest in the world and worked with a lot of them, right? I've seen a lot of amazing double bass drummers, and I think what you're able to play is absolutely incredible. So share tips as to how to develop your feet to that level.
There was a long time ago, I touched on my heel-toe technique, but it's an older variation of the heel-toe technique. It's not so much for consistency, for consistently just doing the same thing over and over and over. It's more of a stamina thing. I save a lot of energy using my foot technique, whether it be starting songs with the heel-toe and finishing off with the power of my legs and my calves. But I found... I run every day. I run every single day. I haven't ran yet. I wanted to do this first, but I'm ready to run. I got my shorts on, everything. But I run every day. I keep my wind up, and I do a lot of leg workout stuff. My legs aren't huge, but I work on the calves, and I like to run on the my toes to keep my calves powerful. So that does help for what I'm doing. But I think over the years, I've just developed these really weird techniques that I've never really seen. I think my right foot, when I'm going fast, kind of just turns itself like this, and it just works for me. I've never really had a full-on explanation of how to get your chops up faster, but the best tip I can give is to really start slow. And I'm more of defining like notes. I like to separate each note of each kick drum hit. It's very important to me to keep them very separate and their own, in their own world, just the power equally in each one. So I start off slow most of the time, and I find that super important to be able to break each note separately and have these flutters and different patterns and things that you're doing and just keeping them in their own world, you know?
When you, you know, so I got, what you accomplished is from just doing it, right? Figuring out this is the technique that'll get me the speed and control, and I just got to play and play and play to get it faster.
That's where my persistence is for sure.
There's a bunch of guys in the metal world, and like, you know, if you've ever heard the term that like triggers are cheating, I would like to go on record saying it's the exact opposite.
Yeah,
because the reality is, with the speeds that a lot of these guys play at, you know, like Art or an Alex Bennett or Mario from Gojira, like they all have like blistering fast feet, and you're not going to hear how even your hits are without triggers, realistically. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because at that speed, and a lot of these guys have great power at that speed too, but it's never going to be as powerful it is if you were just playing a four on the floor at like a reasonable tempo. It's just, that's the way it is. Same way if you were just, you know, like,
yeah.
But if you have a like triggers going along and you're monitoring it when you're practicing, there is no denying how well you're playing and how even your hits are. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's the best way to really hear how accurate your feet are. And then also if you're sloppy too, because then, you know, like if you're a sloppy player, you're going to get missed triggers or it's not going to trigger, you know, like they, in a weird way, train you to be more solid.
Yeah, definitely. It brings up the consistency of each note. Like I was saying, very true. I've been using the same technique again, and the triggers, I agree with Josh. It's like everybody can go on say that they cheat or whatever, but it's, once you mess up,
everybody hears when you mess up if you're triggering.
You hear it.
And if you're not consistent enough, it's going to go away and you're going to lose it and it's gone. Like, it's just no denying how solid you're playing.
Yeah. And I imagine when you're battling, David, when you're battling a band, like I'm talking, you're battling a heavy metal band with guitars and bass and somebody screaming, to be able to really have that full balance of the band, triggering is, I'm totally for that, for keeping the band sound tight as hell, for sure.
And you trigger your bass drums then?
I do both. We have a mic inside on my pillow as well as on the hole, and then triggering on top of that.
Yeah, so we did the same part process. Yeah.
What do you use for an interface that tracks the speed that works for you to go from the piezo trigger to the actual sound?
I'm using the Roland TM2. It's one of their latest ones. It's for budget. I'm a kid that comes from budget. I didn't have everything growing up, so I needed to find a budget. I used to use the Alesis DM5 forever. I'm sure every metal drummer that is around my age used the same thing. I imagine some are still doing that on the reggae setting, not to mention. But but I roll with the TM2 because it was one of the first ones to be able to incorporate your own sample. And really kind of dig into the settings and make sure that, you know, you find your comfort zone with that. So that's what I've been running, and the Roland triggers as well. There was a long time I was using, which I kind of go back and forth. Trick makes a detonator. It's a laser trigger that's on your pedal, and that has some of the most incredible accuracy. So I like to kind of go back and forth and see what works. I use both of them very often.
Oh, that's fantastic. So
never even heard of that one.
Actually have a connection to send
absolutely
a trigger pulse. Wow, that must track.
It reacts on the beautiful thing about that specific trigger, and I might be going back to it soon too, but instead of accessing a signal for hitting, the signal when something stops. It's when you cut off the signal. So it's a constant running signal, but it will not send it to the brain until that signal stops. I think.
Oh, you're saying it breaks the laser. Like it breaks the laser.
It breaks it versus activating it. So I think that millisecond of accuracy is extremely helpful. I mean, and I've been actually messing with my settings too. And I think I've had a couple of delays in my recent ones, and Josh has noted that. So I've been working a lot at trying to really, again, refine-tune my triggering aspect, for sure.
And dial it in.
Yeah, because when we record it in Pro Tools, it becomes very obvious, like any kind of latency issues between the actual kick drums and the thing. And it, you know, at a medium tempo, it's not such a big deal. But when you're really moving fast, like, you'll notice
you'll
if the latency isn't dialed in.
No, that's amazing. That's an incredible innovation.
Absolutely.
I've heard of, that's a really cool one that I have not seen other guys using. So I got to check that out.
Yeah, definitely do.
I love
SB1, the SB1 trigger system.
The SB1 trigger system. And it's primarily, it's a beater, right? That you can put on any pedal.
It's actually, it's right now, I think they might be working on it for every pedal, but right now it's specifically for trick pedals.
Okay.
But it's a mount that goes on their pedal.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. So I'm going to share something with everybody right now. That just before we go to the next section, there's a great book on double bass drumming I just want everybody to know about by Bobby Rondinelli and Michael Loren. It's published by Modern Drummer. It's on digital, so you can get it on Apple, Kindle, or in print. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal book, and it will take all of the things that Art is doing with his technique and will give people structured exercises to apply it with and to play. And I think it's a really, really powerful tool for everyone to use. So now we're going to go into the audience's favorite part, right? It's hard to pick one part because you guys have given such an incredible download of insight and information and tips for people to apply to their own playing and drumming and studio and production careers. So let's go into the Q&A. So our producer, Taylor Whipple, we got lots of questions. We're not going to keep these guys here all day, so we're just going to get through some of them because there's just way too many. We'd literally be here for a week. So, Taylor, jump in, and let's hit these guys with some questions.
All right, let's do it. First question for Art. Art, Mike asks, what was the most challenging song you had to learn when you joined Lamb of God?
The most challenging song? It'd probably have to be Ruin. It's a very old Lamb of God song that has a very old Chris Adler technique. And that's kind of where I got my foot technique, is using that heel toe. I looked up to the guy. I still do. So he was practically like a mentor to me. And that song in particularly is what inspired my foot technique. So that not only was that the one that inspired me, it was one of the most challenging because I never found the time to really like, oh, let me learn this song. It is extremely difficult. And I guess I realized that when I was learning it. So Ruin would have to be a very difficult one because feet work, again, circling back to all of us talking about my feet, it's the most important part. If your feet aren't on, I don't think you're on. So that song was probably the most difficult. Great question.
All right, Mr. Whipple.
Next question. This one's for Josh. Josh, how does working with Art in Lamb of God compare to some of the other metal and hard rock bands that you've worked with in the past?
Art is on the top tier for sure. Because there's plenty of metal and drummers in particular. It's kind of tough because there's a lot of finagling behind the scenes in the recording process of a lot of like metal drummers for sure. I've been fortunate enough to work with some of the best, and you know, I guess I can privately know who the real deals are, and Art is, you know, I mean, I gotta be careful because all the guys on the top tier that I've worked with are legitimate. You know, your Art Cruises, your Alex Benz, your Mario's, like I've been very fortunate to work with incredible drummers.
And drummers basically, as you would define incredible, that you don't have to fix a lot of stuff and change a lot of stuff around. Like you're more like capturing their incredible playing as opposed to trying to create and nudge it along a little bit.
For sure. You know, like, I mean, honestly, it's been a long time. I guess I still have like bad memories of like recording guys that weren't good, like real early in my career. It's honestly been a very long time since I haven't recorded anybody that was great, but Art is definitely on the top tier list. I guess mostly because he can not only just play metal, he can play other types of stuff. And like, actually when this Lamb of God record does come out, there's a couple tunes where there's going to be some new things that you've never heard on a Lamb of God record. It's just it's an expansion on what they're going to do now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, June 19th, everybody, the new Lamb of God record and Josh and Art's creation and the rest of the band. It's going to be an awesome record, June 19. So Taylor, what else we've got?
All right, this one going back to you, Art. Noah asks, in regard to hand speed, is there any specific exercise or rudiment that you personally use to speed up blast beats?
Just single strokes. I mean, it's like, there's nothing better than single strokes and separating. Again, the separation of each note is so important to me. I find that that's important, not just with the feet, but clearly your hands are important too. But if you are trying to bring up your speed to blast beats, I mean, I don't blast beat much anymore like I used to. But when I do, I'm definitely just working on, I use a lot of my arms, again, back to the focusing on the power of each hit. I kind of found this groove with, David could probably help me on the term for this. I'm not that good at it, but it's just like, I'm almost like accenting, but really with the power of each note behind, it's like, I'm accenting on that first, right? Is that the first and third?
Are you hitting doubles with an accent on the one?
Yeah. Okay. It's almost like I'm doing heel toe, but with the stick.
Right.
While
right.
focusing
like
on
like snare. A push pull, almost.
Very push pull, but there's power on each one. So if the first hit is down, there's power coming from this section right here at my wrist. And if the next one is up, I'm driving into the snare drum at the same time. So it's never a finger thing for me. It's never a finger thing. But I found that driving and just using the bounce of my arm is where I get that. No wrist action for me. But I like to, my tip would want to be to just use your arms. Use your power of your arms.
Well, and singles, because there's no room at the speed you're playing and the power that you have to get, there's no rooms for doubles and other things like that. Maybe if you do some cool fill or you're doing a solo and you want to mix up some rhythms, but in the context of the music, it seems pretty clear that it's very power singles, both hands and feet, to really get what you need out of the music.
To get the full effect, especially with my blast beats. So, and also my tempos, I kind of stick around the same thing. I mean, I'll go up to like 200, but I have to have the power behind it. I'll never go above anything that doesn't have power.
There's a great moment on the new record that Art, talk about recording drums last and coming up with things kind of on the fly. Like there's like a very long guitar break build kind of section on the record. And, you know, we're just recording and there's supposed to be just silence in there in the drums and Art just kind of feeling it. And it's funny, at 6:06, the way they record, like actually Art's back is to me, like through the glass. I can only see him through the back. And I just, like all of a sudden, he just starts doing this crazy fast single stroke roll, just ramping up with the guitar, like a amazing crescendo. And then he's like, and he like just comes to a dead stop and he just turns around and I just see him grin at me like, well, what do you think of that? And then he comes in on the one and it was like an amazing moment. And it's actually on the record, like just like that.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Single stroke. Blistering.
Single strokes are the way forward on really getting your metal chops together is practice them and develop upper body for the power in your hands and lower body, especially your calves, for power in the feet and the agility.
Absolutely.
All right, so Mr. Whipple, we got to guys go in the year 2020. So two more questions.
Two more questions. All right, going back to you, Josh. When you take on a project, what do you look for in terms of your vision for the drums as it relates to the overall sound?
Man, I don't know. That's a tough – that's a
– it's based on each project. You listen to the – you know, you get a sense – like you said earlier – You let the drummer be the drummer that.
Yeah, I guess it's how do I fit that drummer into the band and let it sound like them. I think it's really important that it sounds, you know, Art. We used Art's kit. We used the cymbals that he uses live. You know, barring if something is like drastically not working, like I'll swap it out. You know, like every once in a while, I crash with the mic, with the room, whatever. Maybe it's not working, but for the most part, I try really hard to let the drummer use their kit, which makes it, you know, like, you know, it really gives an identity to the record. I mean, like that's half the reason we don't program drums nowadays, right? Like every record will have its own identity. Like Art's going to sound like Art, you know. Tino from Of Mice and Men is a great drummer, and I wanted their record to sound like him. Alex is a great drummer. I want it to sound like him. And for all those records, I make it a point to, just to use their kit and try to find a way to sonically make it work within the picture of the band. I mean, I that way, if you go to see them live, it's going to sound like the same band, which is another kind of thing I am often thinking about. Like, I want you to go to a show and it to sound like the same band.
Definitely.
The interesting thing about that is how much a lot of people, until they get in the studio, don't realize that there is a complete art form and approach and very deliberate experience that you have to gain and bring to a project to let a drummer be the drummer that they are. People don't realize that when you get into the studio, a lot of time the first thing producers want to do is kind of take their approach and their vision and what they know works and say, okay, you're going to do it this way and that way and this way. And the musicians, especially the drummer, are like, oh, whoa, wait a second. Like, that's a completely left turn from how I play every day. And Josh, one of the secrets to your success is very clearly from what you're describing that you've mastered the art form of, hey, I want the best I can get out of this band and out of the musicians. And I'm going to figure out how to capture that, give them my feedback, give them my opinion and kind of, you know, alternative view of how to get the best results, but really capture the essence of it.
It's for sure a balance, you know, like you want it to sound good and you want it to fit within the picture of the band, but you definitely don't want to like cripple the artist in doing what, especially with the band, you know. You got Lamb of God's a great example. Like, I mean, they've been a band for so long. They know exactly what they want, you know, like you break it down to drums or guitar tone or anything, you know, like they come in with a very, like in this particular record, Willie came in and was like, I know I want to use this. I want it to be like, you know, and then Mark obviously had his thoughts on that and he wanted to use this and that. And then in lies the balance of the band. Right. But there's always, without that, there's no signature to the band. I like sometimes a lot of metal records, I call it producer metal because it does. You're like, this could be any band. You're like, the records literally sound like another band that did the exact, you know, like to me, that's
the same producer.
I think like if, real talk, if people, they're like, generally I try not to do too many things like what we're doing right now, because real talk, once we start talking about the producer a lot, like we've kind of, I messed up, like, right? Like you should be talking about the band. You should be talking about what a great performance that the guys did on the record, in my opinion.
Okay.
So well, I guess, did that answer the question? I don't even know if it answers the question.
Oh, totally did. It's your philosophy that you it's like some people refer to it like, you know, the fly on the wall, but with the power of how the record's going to sound, right?
Sure.
So kind of a cut, right? You're like, you take that approach that like, hey, I don't want to get in the way of anything, but I'm going to make sure that within my role that this thing comes out amazing.
Yeah, you're the quality check, the checks and balances at the end. So, you know, I think I ended up beating it to the ground.
So I know there's a drum question next for Art. Taylor, you got 1,000 of them. Pick one.
All right. Here's the next one for Art. This person asked, what about odd time signatures? How do you approach learning odd time signatures and any tips for drummers to develop in that area?
Do we do much of that?
No. For one, I'm terrible at math. So you got that going. So that's part one. Part two, I'm terrible at music theory. Part three, I am still weirdly and not a surprise inspired by Mike Portnoy. So I would suggest watching Mike Portnoy. He can teach you and help you with time signature stuff. But at the end of the day, I've never dug into odd time signatures in any group that I've ever been in, whether it be Winds of Plague, Prong, and now Lamb of God. We've never really dabbled with odd time signatures. But if I can suggest, I can just suggest Mike Portnoy, obviously. That's the best answer. I'm so sorry, but like, I have not
question.
A guy.
There's a question that just came in. Was the technique on 512 hard to learn?
No, in a way, because until you actually watch how it was done, it found its own groove. I think there's a floor tom. You're doing triplets between the floor. You're making a triplet. You're creating a triplet with the floor tom and two bass notes. Josh can probably explain that in theory.
Is the floor tom the first of the triplet? Is it floor
correct.
Kick, floor kick,
yes.
Kick?
Floor okay. Kick, kick. But meanwhile, yep. you're keeping time on your ride, and you're in a 4/4 beat, right, Josh? And it's just like the snare is on the 2 and 4, and it's just. But you're creating that first note is the floor tom and doing a if I can explain it in Art Cruise form, it's a shagadadum ka, shagadadum ka.
You speak a lot of that in the studio.
Yeah,
there's a lot of that talk. You need like a gagadadum doom 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 ka, like that's what we need.
Yeah,
Art
yeah,
and I speak the same language like that.
Yeah, thankfully, and I think, but that song was it wasn't overly complex. It was a really fun groove though. Josh and Chris obviously crushed that record too. So it's like there's a lot of cool stuff in that song in particular. That groove was a little bit weird at first.
Yeah, the shuffle on the back half is a little weird. The shuffle on the back half is
back. And the thing is, back to that, my previous statement, David, it's like the separation and practicing the very pivotal separation of each note is so important to me. And so it was difficult at first learning that part in that song, but I've already focused on that's the kind of drummer I am. I want to make sure that each hit is extremely separate and its own thing. That's a perfect example of it.
And it's really repetition that is one of the keys to you put the work in and you just keep working on it until you get that separation.
That's it.
Which the first time any drummer plays any lick, no matter how good of a drummer they are, it never sounds the same as if you just work on it and work on it and work on it, and you can really get that. It's a nuance that only really pays off after a lot of work on it, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's just repetitive things. And again, it's like, even then I've found the time to do that, it's beyond me, but I've thankfully been able to do that. And now that we have some time off, I'm focusing on that even more than I've been able to before. So I'm stoked.
Hey, I can see this little chat here and someone asked a question about toms. I would love to answer real quick.
Yeah.
About just the tuning of toms, because they asked, as a non-metal drummer and realizing the music is generally played in a dense frequency field, I've always been curious to how tom tuning is approached. I don't actually tune the toms really any different for like metal than I would any other thing. Maybe the head choice is different, but the tuning of it for the most part, I guess I take that back, because like a jazz set, you might tune the bottom head like pretty high. I don't approach the tuning so much any differently than I would the recording of it. Well, even I guess the technique is the same, but I probably scoop more mids out of it for a metal record. And I always do top and bottom on miking on the toms and bust those into a single track. So the miking in the EQ after the fact is probably the biggest thing to make it fit in the balance of a metal spectrum.
Wow. So top and bottom head miking.
Always.
Yeah.
On to one track. So later on, you never want to break that out again. You just strictly to capture the tone, the depth, the overall sound. And then from there on, you got it.
Always. I always top and bottom. And I always try to record at a studio, like we did it at 606, Hybrid Studios in California. I use a lot too. Before that, I was at Spin in New York. And I always try to go to a studio that has an actual console for drums solely so I can do that. Cause I like to bust it in. I only want one channel in Pro Tools at the end of the day. And I EQ the toms pretty heavily going into, I pretty much know exactly what I want. It's one of the few things I'm willing to stand behind on all my records. I love the tom sounds.
All right, well, it's a great question, right? So
I hijacked you, Taylor.
No, it's okay. So Josh, on the toms, you use the console EQ.
Yes.
Okay, so you'll just straight whatever, you'll choose the console EQ, get the sound you want, then commit that to Pro Tools, and then that's what you got.
Yeah, I'm very happy to do it on an SSL. I was always an SSL guy for forever. And at 606, we used a Neve and an API, which are both great. Okay. I'm less picky about that. I pretty much know. I'm more picky about the mics that I use and things like that.
Okay, awesome. Well, guys, you've been so generous with your time. This is incredible. I want to thank Art Cruz and Josh Wilbur on behalf of Modern Drummer and the thousands of people worldwide who are participating in this and watching it. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for sharing your words of wisdom. And the new Lamb of God record drops June 19th, 2020. It's a great record. Everybody check it out. And thank you, Art. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot. Of fun.
Our pleasure. And so, everyone, I just want to say a real quick thank you. Modern Drummer, Meinl, Drum Channel. Those are the sponsors today. ModernDrummer.com/subscribe. You know, it's the number one drum magazine in the world for over 40 years for a reason, is that we just provide literally endless amounts of information, both in print and digitally. And the subscription is a little more than the price of a cup of coffee every month. And it's just an amazing, amazing value. So I hope everyone will join the Modern Drummer family and subscribe, moderndrummer.com/subscribe. And VIP contests, interviews, features, gear, lessons, all included. Of course, drumchannel.com, one of our premier partners, has incredible amounts of learning and education online. And also part of the Modern Drummer website. We have exclusive content from Drum Channel, so it's kind of two for one. And Meinl Cymbals, Art's choice of cymbals and many other metal drummers. Meinl Cymbals are great cymbals. So everyone, thank you for tuning in, and best of luck out there with your drumming and lives, and stay safe and healthy. I'm David Frangioni for Modern Drummer. Be well.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.